Now 8:30 on June 19, 2019, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners to order. Ms. Poe, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Ms. Shreve?
Here.
Dr. Brundage?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Poe. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 32-2081H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on the agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website pursuant to ARS 32-2081H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go to executive session on any item of the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records, or A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and requests to speak. A person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and who is present may make a brief statement to the committee by filling out the speaker's request form and giving it to the board staff person. The committee may also have questions for those who speak. Please only use initials for patients and children. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in public meetings. Be advised that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. I am going to take the chair's prerogative and change the order of the complaints. We are going to start with first, which is complaint B on our agenda, complaint number 1901. Pamela Horner and Dr. Brundage, you are the lead on that. Would you like to provide a summary?
Yes, but give me a few minutes while I change to that. I had thought we would go in order. All right, Madam Chairman, I am the lead board member in this case of RFI 19-01 regarding Pamela Horner, PhD, and license number 4052. The complaint stems from an evaluation that Dr. Horner completed in December 2017 of RB. Dr. Horner and RB are members of the Arizona Army National Guard, and RB was ordered by the unit to submit to evaluation. The complainant came to see Dr. Horner on December 12, 2017. As her civilian practice, RB alleges that Dr. Horner did not present herself as an officer with the U.S. Army. RB feels that there was conflict in ethical codes as a medical provider to provide services in the unit. He did not feel that the licensee clarified her roles and disclosed private information without his authorization. RB alleges that there is a conflict with Dr. Horner regarding her ethical demands as a provider and organizational demands of her position with the Army National Guard. Licensee responded in a timely fashion through her attorney, Charles Hoover. Dr. Horner has been in private practice for 16 years and an officer with the National Guard for 7 years. RB was referred by the State Surgeon's Office for a behavior health evaluation to determine relevancy of inclusion in RB's medical evaluation package. Licensee met with RB on 12-14-2017 and 12-09-2018. Appointments were conducted by Dr. Horner in her role as a behavior health officer for the National Guard. She alleges that she was not operating as a civilian psychologist. The first appointment was fitness of duty. The second appointment was to address RB's concern and misunderstanding regarding the first appointment. Dr. Horner responded that she initially offered appointment on December 5th, 2017 at the medical detainment building at the state surgeon's office. RB declined and asked if he could be seen outside of Papago Park Military Reservation. Dr. Horner agreed to meet her at the civilian office prior to her regular office hours. Licensee greeted him in the lobby, introduced herself as Captain Horner. RB had been informed by State Surgeon's Office of the purpose of the meeting. Dr. Horner denied conflict, indicating RB's case was determined if he had disqualifying behavioral health conditions. No ethical conflict, claims her role was clear and purposeful as evaluation was plainly stated. On December 2nd, 2018, RB emailed Dr. Horner his concerns. Doctor met with RB and his case manager for clarification. Dr. Horner adamantly denies the allegations she released PHI outside of Arizona National Guard. She indicates that she met HIPAA standards were enforced and Army was not and at no way released any information without cause. That's a brief summary of my case.
Thank you, Dr. Brundage. I do have requests to speak. I believe RB, you'd like to come forward, please. Remember, if you just use your initials.
How you doing, ma'am?
Good. Thank you.
The initials stand for Richard.
That's okay. I don't need your full name. We're good. So thank you for being here today. We appreciate it. Wanted to give you an opportunity to provide us with any comments that you'd like to add to the summary or any of your thoughts.
Yeah.
They have questions that of you as soon as you're through.
Absolutely. I joined the Army. Back in 1992, it's been about 27 years. Served active duty for most of that time, and served. I was a combat medic, flight medic, and a practical nurse. Worked everywhere from special operations to the Institute of Surgical Research, the Army Burn Unit. Deployed overseas in Afghanistan, Helmand Province, and I've deployed overseas to Iraq and Panama, and all around the world. Upon leaving active duty, I came into the Arizona National Guard. In 2012, I was assigned over at the Joint Force Headquarters in Phoenix, Arizona, where I was the senior enlisted medical advisor for the state surgeon, Colonel Leeper. Soon after that, I had started having some issues where, you know, from multiple deployments and being a medic in those deployments, started seeking help outside that were authorized through Luke Air Force Base. I've seen several providers outside of the military because of my position within the unit, the medical detachment, and conflicts within the unit with some of the commanders, including the surgeon. I had reported some of these things and had IG complaints that have gone up to the Department of the Army. Some of the instances have been published within the Arizona Republic as well about some of the practices that happen within the Arizona Army National Guard. One of the big concerns that I had was, at the time, was how a lot of the soldiers were being discharged from the Arizona Army National Guard under pretenses of that they had pre-existing conditions. And those pre-existing conditions, upon their discharge after medical evaluation, they were found to be unfit and did not have any eligibility for benefits afterwards. That was a big concern for me. I brought that up several times. This procedure went through many, many channels to include Congresswoman then, Christian Sinema, all the way up to the governor's office. And so in 2017 in December, I was command directed after I had made a formal complaint concerning Major Owen and the person behind me, standing with Captain Horner, Dr. Horner, and the surgeon. After that, I was ordered to have an evaluation by then Captain Horner, now Major Horner, Dr. Horner. I pushed back as much as I could, and after several months, my commander directed me to go ahead and go to this appointment. At no time did Dr. Horner ever ask or set up a meeting that that was actually at the medical detachment. That never happened. I was ordered to go to her office, and I did. I went to her office where I was in uniform, and I was on duty, and I went into her office where she was in civilians, and she never stated anything about her position within the National Guard. I asked her if she wanted to have any of my records or history from my prior physicians and providers dealing with some of the things that I've dealt with within combat, and she declined. She said she didn't need that. And so we talked for approximately, say, about an hour and a half. Dr. Horner is a very nice lady. I think that Dr. Horner is a very good doctor. I think she is. I really believe she is. I think that she really does care about soldiers. But the things that happened weren't as if what there had been said. And the things that, and the stuff that I had disclosed to her, I was not under the understanding. Although being ordered, then it was going to a civilian provider. It didn't make any much sense to me. The unethical issues that I come up with these is that there's a system of retaliation within the Arizona National Guard that the command, which I explained as far as some of the complaints that I've filed with the investigating general's office. And so all these things that come down, you know, there was no billing, you know, as far as being seen in a civilian aspect. There was no sense of any type of formal entity of that I was actually even there. Later on, I requested and received a non-formal, non-Army. It wasn't on an Army form, which all Army evaluations have to be documented. There's Army regulations that govern the whole thing. And in no way was it ever documented on any official Army documentation. There's also a process in which, even though she is a PhD, it has to go to the chief of the behavioral health because of issues back in that were brought up to Congress in 2010 and 2012 about military providers doing this where they discharge soldiers that have, some have been deployed, have serious issues from deployment, and then are released without any benefits. This is a bigger problem than whether or not it's just the HIPAA violation here. This is a big issue that's been stemming within the Arizona National Guard, and they've been allowed to go ahead and do this. And I'm not the first, and I'm probably won't be the last. But being that I was a senior enlisted medical advisor to the surgeon, you know, that says a lot as far as the complicity that they can operate the way they want to operate without any consequences and impunity. What else can I tell you? The other dates as far as like meeting with her in 2018, in December, if I had heard that right, I don't recall that at all. I don't recall any of those issues meeting with her at all in December of 2018. I think I did meet her as far as like, I think it was January of 2018. And that was when she gave me the documentation.
Right.
Other than that, I'm open for any questions.
All right. I'm sure we'll have some questions. Dr. Brundage, would you like to start? Do you have any questions?
I have many questions. First, RB, thank you so much for coming and thank you for your service. I am looking at an email that was sent from you to a Marcus Slane, First Sergeant of the U.S. Army, and the date appears to be, the date, but it was to this person. It says, sorry for the late response, but the 15th is not going to work out for me. I have a cardiology appointment in the morning. In the afternoon, I have to pick my spouse up from the airport. Is there an opening next week, or does Captain Horner have an office I can meet her outside PPMR? And it's signed by you.
Dr.
You remember
Brundage,
that?
Dr. Brundage, could you tell us what page of the document you are looking
at? Oh, it's page 503. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
And there had been a previous from Marcus Flame to you, and that was December 12th, where they indicated Captain Horner is available at 1200 this Friday, the 15th. Can you please confirm that you will be able to make this appointment? And it, again, was sent by First Sergeant Marcus Flame. Do you remember that correspondence?
Not at all, ma'am. I do not know who a First Sergeant Marcus Blaine is. I have never heard of a Marcus Blaine.
Okay, well, there appears to be some correspondence, and at the very bottom it says information contained in this correspondence may be subject to the Privacy Act and HIPAA. So that information at that time was conveyed.
Dr. Brundage, are you talking about, it says it's from a Richard Borowski Villa?
Well, yeah. I believe that's the complainant.
Yes. Oh, Flame, I'm sorry.
Correct?
Marcus.
Yeah. Page 503.
And there's several people copied on it?
That's Sergeant Fiami.
Oh, Fiami.
Fiami.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's a sergeant.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I saw this correspondence from you to him where it clarified that the 15th wouldn't work out, but that you asked if there was other options for an office that she could meet you outside of the Papago place.
Yeah, that did. I did send that email. So
okay.
What's your question?
And at that point, my question is, at that point you were corresponding with the Army National Guard and had requested to meet outside. Did you feel that that would just be a continuation of the orders that you received to go and get a evaluation?
I was not under that understanding at that time, no.
Okay. All right. And I also am seeing on page 501, it says RB active duties orders, but I'm having somewhat of a problem reading if this was for Dr. Horner or for RB. Sometimes the gobbledygook of the orders confuses me. Anyway, I don't have any further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Brundage. Dr. Flowers?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your service as well. From what I read in the paperwork, you've completed over 27 years of service.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct? And from what, I used to be years ago in the Army National Guard. And as I recall, if you get enough good years, quote unquote, when you hit 60, you can get a retirement from the military.
That's correct.
And I'm wondering, there are a lot of purposes for evaluations in the military. One of them, indeed, is one you reference, where some active duty people are ordered for an evaluation and they are looking at an unsuitability discharge possibility. And, if I read through the stuff you sent in, I have served on active duty as well as a psychologist, and there are procedures for that, I guess. Looking at the documentation that we have here, it appears that one issue was evaluating your fitness for duty in the Army. And one aspect, from what I gather, was the mental health aspects. But there were already some issues they were concerned about. And from what I gather, at some point they decided that you were not fit for duty, but there were some medical issues.
Right. I had come down with diabetes.
Okay.
Duty.
So there are a number of things, but I didn't see within the correspondence that we received that you were referred for, well, there are many types of evaluations. Sometimes people are evaluated in regards to whether they have any kind of mental health limited duty or disqualification for duty.
Correct.
Was it clear to you which of those or both it was?
No, because I was being evaluated for a medical reason, for my as far as eligibility, and that was because of the diabetes, and there was no, and it's not part, and it's not required, no matter what anybody might say later on, that it's not required to go ahead and have a mental health evaluation. The mental health evaluation was completely separate. It was an ordered mental health evaluation.
Well, there can be both.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are times when you, I know the Navy calls them medical boards. I know that in the Army they're profiles. And I remember people asked me if I had a profile, and I thought, what do you mean? But they were about ready to have
right.
me push up.
Well, that brings up an interesting point because of those profiles. Captain Horner, Dr. Horner, first issued a P3 profile, which she's not authorized to do underneath Army regulations. And then after I brought that up, it was later changed to a P2. I have documentation, too.
Okay, yeah. But in any case, it appeared that, again, from what I read in the documentation, that it was you were having issues medically, and they're also investigating whether there'd be another qualification for not being on active duty, limited duty, whatever, related to mental health issues. And from what I read, the results indicated that none were found. You know, but there are indeed times when you can be sent because they're angry with you. And they're hoping that the mental health person will find something, quote-unquote, wrong with you to justify administrative discharge. But it didn't appear to be the case with you.
Well, it did with the profile that I received. It was called...
Can't do diagnosis out in public.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
So we've read the material, so...
Yes.
We want to be careful with that, so we want to make sure we don't talk about any diagnosis or personal...
Okay,
medical.
I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, but what I'm saying here is, from what I gathered in looking at the documentation, you were not found to have any, well, I would say, unsuitability discharge.
And I don't think you have all the records, sir.
Okay. Well, I saw the report and diagnosis.
Right.
But that's in a different arena from the unsuitability.
Sir, I'd be happy to give you that documentation.
And she did indicate in the report that she saw you as not having any mental health limitations to be on active duty. You know,
the case of which the documentation that she provided.
Okay, that's what I saw here.
I could give you contra information to that in the documentation.
Okay, and my understanding is you knew she was a captain in the Army. At the time you saw her?
At the time I saw her, that's what I was told.
Okay.
She was in civilian attire, and I was in her office.
Okay.
Civilian office in Peoria, I think it was, or...
Okay. Okay, but again, I know it's not easy being in the reserves or active duty or guard, and I congratulate you for handling those many years, and it appears you're going to be getting... I'm not sure if you've been released, but you'll be getting an honorable discharge and eligibility for retirement.
I don't know if I will be getting an honorable discharge. I'm currently on leave. Soon after I filed this complaint,
okay.
The Arizona National Guard, Major Onan, filed criminal charges against me for damaging a door at the medical detachment.
Okay, well, hopefully
that we'll see. After 27 years of service, the Guard is now charging me with a criminal act. Right after I filed this complaint.
Hopefully that'll be resolved. And
I hope so.
As in civilian sector, there are times you can have issues and problems, but they give you discipline, send you on your way, but don't remove all of your benefits. But, you know, I'm not on that committee, so I don't know.
Well, I hope so, sir. I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your service.
Again, thanks for being here and for your service. Just want to clarify a few things. So you knew that, I believe it's Captain Horner, I'm not in the military, so I think that's what it is, was going to provide an evaluation, and in the email it actually says, can you meet outside of PPMR, meaning off-site of the military base, my understanding. So when you met with her at the appointment, you said in military uniform?
Yes, ma'am.
And you knew she worked for the military?
Yes, I've never seen her before. I met a civilian lady who said that she was Dr. Horner.
Okay, and she's copied on this email, so you knew that was the person that's going to do the evaluation. So what part of, when you were there, did you not think it was part of the evaluation that you were required to do?
Because I never, ever had signed any formal authorization for the medical records to be released to the Arizona Army National Guard. I had never signed any paperwork to anything when I went to her office.
When you receive orders, and again, I'm again not military. My dad was, but I have a kid memory of it.
Thank you, Dad.
So when you receive orders to do an evaluation, is it commonplace then that you would have to sign those type of forms when you're there because of an order?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be common that I would have to assign any kind of authorization for whether it be camp command directed or anything else, as far as I know. I could be mistaken. Was the senior medical guy there, but from what I know.
All right, and just to make sure I understand, and we're looking through all of this, the complaint is that you felt that the captain was unethical and that she did not provide you with documentation or didn't state that during the time of your evaluation that she was doing it regards to the order, the military order.
It was very confusing to me at the time, and then my complaint is that there was no formal documentation. There's no formal authorization, and there's no formal billing at all. And what it ended up happening is that through my process, just so I can explain, may I explain a little bit? Through my process, I didn't receive any kind of all of the only thing that went to the board, because after they take the medical board and they send it all up forward, they'll throw in the mental health issues as well. Well, when it went to the VA, the case manager that was in charge of getting all those records, and she did have authorizations. I wrote out the authorization forms for this for Dr. Ahmed, Dr. Little, and Dr. Thoracchio. And so those were three providers that I had seen before I had ever met her, and those were sent, those authorizations were given to the case manager. Case manager never wanted to see any of that. The only thing that went forward was the 1.5 hour summary of sort to the VA. Since then, I've had to go and appeal my case and appeal my case and appeal my case. This January, I had to go to the go to Washington, D.C. to go ahead and present myself to the board there and give them all the information in person, because the medical detachment, Major Onan, that was responsible for sending those documentations in the first place, it just wasn't going to happen. So I had set up a board meeting with the evaluation board in Washington, D.C., Department of the Army, where I handed them, here are the documents from Dr. Little, from Dr. Thoracchio, and Dr. Ahmed. Those finally got in, and it's now in my record. After a year later.
All right. Are there any further questions from the board members? All right.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, we appreciate you being here. If you would like to take a seat, I would in the audience. I'd like to now. I have a speaker request forms from.
Hey, ma'am. I have to go. Is that okay? I have. That's what I explained. I appreciate you.
Follow up questions. I mean, it's obviously up to you.
Is there any other questions at this?
I there may be after we speak to the doctor, but I don't know. So it's totally up. It's up to you what you decide to do.
Well, I would need to conclude because I have a civilian. I'm on leave right now. I got a job, and I don't want to I don't want to be late. I work at the U of A.
All right, thank you.
I need to get going.
Okay.
But I appreciate the time, and I thank you guys for hearing me out.
Uh-huh.
For your time. Thanks.
All right. Dr. Horner, would like to come forward? And I believe you have your counsel with you?
Yes, ma'am.
If you'd like to formally introduce yourself, and counsel, if you'd like to also.
Yes, I'm a Major Pamela Horner, licensed psychologist and behavioral health officer with the Arizona Army National Guard.
Good morning, Charlie Hover, counsel for Dr. Horner.
Great, thank you for being here. Again, thank you, doctor, for your service. If you'd like to provide just a brief overview of your position and thoughts on this situation.
Sure, thank you. As a behavioral health officer with the Army National Guard, I frequently see soldiers for a variety of evaluations. So in this case, the soldier was referred to me for a behavioral health evaluation to find out if there were any mental health conditions that would be relevant to his medical retirement case. We already had identified that he had these medical conditions that found him unfit for continued military service, which rendered him with his years of service for a medical retirement. So the state surgeon's office, in order to do their due diligence for the soldier, said, will you please see if there's anything else to be added to this case so that when it goes to the evaluations, the disability evaluation system, they would be able to make a judgment on what conditions were medically unfit for continued service. So that was my sole purpose and responsibility. The only question I had to answer was, are there any behavioral health conditions that would disqualify him for continued service? Which, again, like you said, Dr. Flowers, I did not find that he had any behavioral health condition that would render him unfit for continued service. One thing I'd like to bring up, other than what has already been, is from the investigative report that I received on Friday, I realized that one of the issues that has been difficult for RB is that it seems that he believes that somewhere along the line I changed my diagnosis from the original when I met him, which is in the documents that you have, to what the physical evaluation board found, which was something different. And what I would like to be clear about is that that diagnosis was never changed by me when it left the National Guard, Arizona National Guard, the state, to the disability evaluation system. The physical evaluation board reviewed all the relevant records that were available, which the soldier made available, which case manager had made available, and they concluded, and in their documentation it says that other diagnosis, which again the outcome was the same, he was still found fit for service based on purely mental health conditions. And so that in mind, this soldier does have 27 years where he served very effectively as a combat medic, as a trainer of combat medics. There is no history and no evidence to substantiate that he had a behavioral health issue that limited his ability to serve. And so that was my conclusion. That was the physical evaluation board's conclusion, regardless of what their diagnosis was versus mine.
Dr. Brundage, do you have any questions?
I do. Dr. Horner, thank you, too, for your service. And I am trying to wade through some of the information. I am seeing on page 497 out of 558, memorandum for records, and but that was sent February 26th. And it was not from you. With the information that you conveyed to the surgeon's office, it looked solid. What is the typical protocol for scheduling standards of medical fitness? Do you get a letter? I saw the information that, in fact, I believe informed you. However, does the servicemen have that?
Yes, ma'am. So the typical process is that...
Speak into Mike a little bit more. Oh, pull sorry. It closer to you. There
sure.
You go. Thank you.
So typically, a soldier is referred to me through the state surgeon or deputy state surgeon when they're going through a medical evaluation board process. And so the soldier is notified through, they have a case manager assigned to them within the state, and also the medical readiness NCO, that was that Sergeant Fiamme. They are responsible for working directly with the soldier, counseling him about the process, assisting him in making those appointments, and communicating with the interested parties.
I am looking for other board members on page 501 of 558, that there's orders 340-105, and it has your name. It says, for official use only, Privacy Act, Joint Force Headquarters, but it's dated December 6th. And so apparently you were ordered to full-time National Guard duty, but I didn't know if that was just for that month, or was this in somehow related to your treatment of RB?
Yes, Dr. Brundage, that was related to seeing him on that date. Normally, I'm a traditional guardsman. I drill a weekend a month, a couple weeks a year, and I do go in on extra Fridays where they put me on active duty orders to be able to conduct these types of evaluations. So in this case, because the soldier had requested to see me outside of the military reservation at my office, and the National Guard put me on active duty orders for that day so that I would be in a duty status when I met with him.
Perfect. Now, my question, too, is at this point, would he receive this order also?
No, he would not have received that order.
Okay, but that order is for you alone?
Yes.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Yes, thank you for your service again. I know that it can be quite a challenge to wear a uniform and to work in mental health. Are you a psychologist in the Army, or is it?
Yes, sir, I'm a psychologist in the Army as well as in my civilian career.
Okay, because just the title, behavioral health, whatever, just seemed a little bit odd.
Yes, it could be confusing.
Okay. When you met with the soldier, did you talk about the purpose of the evaluation and your role?
Yes, Dr. Flowers, I absolutely did. When I met him at the door, I introduced myself as Captain Horner. When we sat in my office, I introduced myself again, explained the purpose of the evaluation, and actually, spent 2 hours with him to make sure that I was thorough in helping him to understand what my findings were.
Okay, I know in the civilian practice, we go through a lot of consent forms, intake paperwork, and on and on and on.
Yes.
Is there something similar that happens when you meet with an active, I'm not sure if it was active duty or not, but when you meet with a soldier in your capacity as a commissioned officer, is there similar paperwork?
No, there isn't. Within the Department of the Army, within the National Guard, when soldiers are referred to treatment and they're command directed or ordered to go, it's implied consent then. Now, they're given verbal informed consent, but there aren't written documentation. And, I've had the opportunity to provide behavioral health in a couple of active duty installations and have adopted a lot of their forms and documents, but they also are not using a written informed consent like we do in the civilian world.
Yeah, there are many differences, I know from experience. But thank you, and it's nice that you're now major.
Thank you, sir.
Again, thanks for your service. Is it a usual practice to do an evaluation in your private setting as opposed to having it at the Army base?
Oh, no, ma'am, it's an exception. So typically I will meet with them on the extra Fridays I do or on a drill weekend. That was the time that I first offered. This case was being expedited, trying to get this packet together and out of the state before the end of the year. So we were already in December. And so I had offered the dates I was available in December, which were declined by the service member. And that was when that request was made, and I was asked to make an exception.
So have you done that before?
No.
And it's your thoughts that he was under the impression that it was for the evaluation from the Army, that was requested by the Army?
Yes, ma'am. There'd be no other context under which I would have seen him.
All right. Are there any further questions from the board? Thank you. Thank you for your service. And we're going to now deliberate. If you'd like to have a seat, that would be great.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Brundage, the committee now is going to begin deliberations. Please note that deliberations is a time for the committee members to deliberate the case amongst ourselves without interruption from complainants, licensee, or attorneys representing the licensee. Dr. Brundage, you're the lead. Would you like to start with your thoughts?
Yes, I would, Chairman Shreves. After reviewing all of the material, I'm aware that there were several pieces of paper that were concerning. I think that the email that was sent from RB to Marcus Siomi, Sergeant, was pretty telling. I also know that we are looking at a process with the Army National Guard, which is certainly different than what we would evaluate on the civilian level. I felt that the orders that Dr. Horner received, or Captain Horner received, were complete. They listed all of the concerns that we would have with regard to confidentiality and everything. And although RB, it is unfortunate that he finds himself in this position, I really do not feel that this evaluation contributed to the struggles that he now is facing with the Army National Guard. So at this point, I would make a motion for dismissal.
Thank you, Dr. Brundage. And Dr. Flowers, any comments?
Yes, I believe this was also handled. I think that the doctor was trying to be accommodating, rather than saying we had to just do it in the designated time on that weekend. You know, one thing that might have been helpful had she worn a uniform that day when the appointment happened, but I don't consider that a major issue. It's obviously in her office, and she was going to go to work right afterwards, and hard to pack in two things to wear, change in your office. So I second the motion that the complaint be dismissed.
All right, are there any other comments? I echo both of your comments. So we have a motion and we have a second. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, then the motion is approved, and we'll be hearing, I guess, from the board at that point. Thank you for coming. All right, we are now going to move to complaint number 1903, Dr. Hill. And Dr. Brundage, you are the lead on that case. Would you like to provide a summary?
Yes, Chairman Shreves. I would like to lead off with RFI Kurt Hill, PhD, psychologist license 4451. The complaint indicates that LH and friends were seeing Dr. Hill for service. LH alleges that there was an exchange of information between Dr. Hill and friend regarding LH's medical condition and without LH being present. LH never authorized Dr. Hill to speak with friend, and he also claimed that there was information exchanged by text frequently with friend's cell, and licensee called him by Dr. Hill by his first name. When LH initially sought Dr. Hill, the doctor explained that they would not exchange info about friend and thought he would have the same courtesy extended to him. LH claims that the situation has created a major setback in his mental health and that his condition has deteriorated. The licensee, Dr. Hill, responded in a timely fashion through his attorney, J. Arthur Eves. Dr. Hill provided info regarding his experience and qualifications He's been a psychologist for 23 years, conducted evaluations to determine SMI status, and has never had a board complaint. He went on to summarize LA's treatment. He was initially contacted in October 2018 for LH, who was referred by his friend. LH was seen in intake 11-10-18 when he learned another session. At that time, the intake was incomplete, and so he learned that another session was needed to information. The doctor indicated that information was rather slow in gaining the intake information, and he had concerns with regard to deficits in memory and language abilities. After the session, LA was unsure that he wanted to continue treatment. He was urged by Dr. Hill to see a psychiatrist at that time. LA scheduled an appointment 11-24-18 and canceled that appointment. On February 11th, 2019, scheduled an appointment, and on February 15th, the next day, LH canceled and was rescheduled for February 27th, 2019. LH declined that appointment and indicated he would call in the future to reschedule. On March 28th, 2019, LH tried to schedule another appointment, however, responded that he was having health issues, was going to the hospital frequently, and that his friend was yelling at him. No further date was considered. Dr. Hill denies breaking confidentiality of LH. He states that he has never texted the friend with regard to information. He felt that he also indicated the complaint was filed 3 days after the final phone call, and he's not had any exchange notes or texting. And at this point, Dr. Hill requests that this case, that the complaint be dismissed.
Thank you, Dr. Brundage, for your summary. I do have speaker request forms. I do not see one from the complainant. Just want to confirm that you just have the ones that have, no one wants to put one in. So Dr. Hill, please, you're here. If you'd like to come forward with your attorney. If you'd like to, both of you formally introduce yourselves for the record, and then Dr. Hill or Mr. Eves, if you'd like to provide a summary.
I've been a psychologist for 23 years.
If you could introduce yourself for the record.
Okay, I'm Kurt Hill, a licensed psychologist.
Okay.
And my name is Artie Eves. I'm here representing Dr. Hill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Eves. Or if you'd like to provide a summary.
I think I'll start. We've provided a pretty detailed response, and I know that you've read that, so I'll try not to go over it. Obviously, Dr. Hill feels some sympathy for LH in this situation. There's clearly some confusion there, so we don't want to say anything that's going to besmirch him, but this didn't happen. This is just something where there's some confusion and appears some manipulation, perhaps, between LH and this friend who's involved and has been mentioned by Dr. Brundage. We have gone out of our way to try to disprove or to try to prove a negative here, which is difficult to do. It's been alleged that some information was shared, and we're trying to prove that it wasn't. We went to the lengths of providing you with the records of friend, which I think clearly demonstrate that no discussions regarding LH were ever noted, at least. I guess that doesn't conclusively prove that there was no discussion, but it's pretty good evidence. We've also tried to rebut the allegation that there were text messages with CB, the friend, regarding LH, and we've provided you with the entire history of those messages. So I think that this is the kind of complaint that the Complaint Screening Committee was created to eliminate, and I think that that's what needs to happen here today. And I know that you'll have questions for Dr. Hill.
Thank you. All right. Dr. Brenda, did you have any questions for Dr. Hill?
I do. Looking at your records, there was a bit of confusion because of the cancellation for treatment of LH. He was seen on November 10th, 2018, correct?
That's right.
Oh, excuse. And then again on November 24th, 2018, or was that a cancellation?
That was a cancellation.
So you saw him twice in the office, correct?
I did.
And help me out. What was the second appointment?
He was very slow with speech, and it was slurred. He was a poor historian, so he was scheduled a second time just to complete the intake.
So correct, but what date was that?
It was November 17th.
Okay, all right. Because it obviously appeared that there were lots of things that were going on. Oh, I see that. No, November 17th. So everything else was due to cancellations and trying to reschedule.
That's right.
Okay. Dr. Hill, do you normally see people in your practice that appear to be good friends concurrently?
I do not. With this case, they weren't very good friends. They were more acquaintances, I'd found out. As a matter of fact, I didn't realize this, but I believe they had met each other about a month prior to his first appointment with me.
Okay. Because I looked at the friend's record, and the initial session was August 28, 2018, and the last records we had is April 16th of 2019. For a total of 47 sessions. Many of these sessions were two a week. So it seems that the friend was really needing more intense care. When you took in LH, were you aware that there was the closeness that LH had indicated?
No, I wasn't. And I think that if it was an issue, he would have been referred to another therapist. All that was done was an intake. So I think what he was wanting was just to figure out maybe what line of action to take in the way of treatment or diagnoses.
Okay. If you had known, how would you have responded to the request to see LH if you had an understanding that they had at least a moderate to close relationship outside of the office?
I think as long as that was discussed initially and information was given about how confidentiality works, that, you know, their issues won't be discussed outside of the session unless there's a release of information, I would have been comfortable with it.
And Dr. Brundage, sorry to interrupt. This is Artie Eves. I just wanted to point out that I'm assuming the question that you asked is somewhat hypothetical based on the two intakes that Dr. Hill had with LH. That was not clear at all that there was this close relationship of any kind. So I appreciate and understand the question, but I think it's somewhat hypothetical in nature.
All right. Chairman Shreves, I have no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Brian. Dr. Flowers, any questions?
I have none, but thank you for showing up.
I just have just want to clarify. I'm always the person that's just like, so I just want to confirm you're stating that you had two sessions with the gentleman and that there were, during that was intake, there was no discussion. During those sessions, did you know these individuals were friends?
I knew they knew each other, and that was it.
That was it. Yeah. And there was no discussion, so you're doing an intake. There were no discussions between either client about the other.
That's correct.
Did they ask about each other?
They did not.
I don't have any further questions. All right. Thank you for stepping forward. You can have a seat unless you have any closing comments.
No, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. We're going to take a moment to some time to deliberate. Dr. Brundage, would you like to start the deliberation?
Absolutely, Chairman Shreve. In reviewing this material, I felt that the informed consent seemed to be complete. I do know that in the complaint, LH had stated that that information gathered would not be exchanged with anyone else, so I believe the doctor had gone through that kind of description. Initially, I had concerns that Dr. Hill was aware of the relationship and that he had seen this person knowing that the friend had been a good friend, but it sounds as if he did not know that And certainly the chaos of trying to structure, to try and schedule him, and also to try and just gather information seemed a bit confusing and chaotic. At this time, my general sense is that I would be in favor of dismissal of RFI Curtis Hill and that complaint at this point.
Thank you.
And I would like to place that in a motion.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Brundage. Lars?
Okay. Just to be clear, you're recommending dismissal of the complaint?
Correct.
Oh, yeah. I second the motion.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. The complaint has been dismissed. Thank you for coming today. We do appreciate it. All right, we're going to move along to our next case, which is complaint number 1905. Dr. Robert Farr, I am the lead on that case, so I will provide a summary. Dr. Farr, the complainant is SD. She states that she's been seeing Dr. Farr for approximately 3 years, that Dr. Farr has not given her any tools to better herself. She states that during an appointment in January 2019, that she made a comment to Dr. Farr about not wanting to leave her home because of her self-image, self-worth. She didn't want to leave. She felt ugly and worthless, and that the doctor told her, quote, well, you're getting a little chunky, and that she told Dr. Farr that wasn't very nice, and then Dr. Farr responded saying, well, some guys like that. The complainant states that she left the appointment at that time and did not go back. The licensee did provide a response in a timely manner through his attorney. Licensee states that there was treatment and for several issues, which I can't identify, that the client had 22 sessions that in a span of 2.5 years, that during the first 3 months of treatment, client was very engaged, then the client stepped back, somewhat regressed, and then started coming back again to meet with the Dr. Farr. Based on the clinical records, Dr. Farr states that, you know, he did provide help. He thought he had provided some useful tools, some intervention techniques for this individual, the client, to use. Dr. Farr states that he did not respond to, that those comments did not occur, that the complainant states that Dr. Farr had made a comment regarding her, that he never said that she was ugly or worthless, and that on that appointment time that she was very upset and seemed to be, very upset about other issues. And that the last appointment was February 2019, where the client asked the doctor to fax the long-term intermittent disability forms to her insurance company. And that concludes my summary. Thank you, Dr. Farr, for being here today. And if you could both introduce yourselves for the record.
Good morning. My name is Dina Anagnopoulos, and I'm the attorney representing Dr. Farr today.
Could you say your last name again?
Anagnopoulos, and I can spell that for you.
Okay.
A-N-A-G-N-O-P-O-U-L-O-S.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
And I'm Dr. Robert Farr, not Ferrugia, Dr. Farr, psychologist.
Great. Thank you for being here today. Dr. Farr, would you or your attorney like to make some opening comments?
I will go ahead and make those opening comments, and I appreciate the investigative report that was just reviewed by the board. I do want to point out that the investigative report does focus on the pertinent points in the records. Dr. Farr's records are very detailed, and to be honest with you, being in this line of work for many, many years, they are some of the best and most thorough records I've seen, and so I appreciate that. I won't reiterate anything in those records. I do want to point out that although the patient did attend sessions with Dr. Farr for approximately 2.5 years, they were sporadic. She took very long lapses in treatment, but I think it's important to point out that the first 3 months of treatment, she attended approximately 10 sessions. Dr. Farr initially thought that 6 to 12 months of therapy would be sufficient, and 2 sessions per week. However, when you look at the first 3 months of her treatment, she made great progress. The patient took steps towards her goals. One of her goals was she loved her job, was having much difficulty with her job, and she actually commented that she was back to work, doing well, and felt, quote unquote, back to normal. She was very involved in her sessions. She was actually using the tools that Dr. Farr had worked with her on, and he also recommended that she see a psychiatrist for medication therapy, which she was complying with. She did take very positive steps towards her goals. Unfortunately, she prematurely terminated her treatment, did not return for 7 months. After those 7 months, she came back, and although she had not completely regressed, she still had made some progress. She did take some steps back. She had changed her medication and only attended, I believe it was about 5 weeks of appointments. She then terminated her treatment again and did not come back for about 14 months. It appears that she came back, had regressed quite a bit, and came back because she did need Dr. Farr to assist her in filling out her documentation for her interim disability. Unfortunately, the patient had completely stopped taking her medication and had regressed quite a bit. Dr. Farr assisted her in the paperwork. He felt that she did need to continue with her therapy, but she did not apparently feel the need to do so. We have asked the board to dismiss this complaint. When you look at the statute, there was nothing that Dr. Farr did or failed to do that constitutes unprofessional conduct. This was simply a case of the patient didn't comply with her therapy, although it was greatly needed, and failed to make the steps that she needed to make because she was not continuing with her therapy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, I'm going to open with some questions. Dr. Farr, just to get to the point, she makes very specific comments about what she said and then your response regarding her appearance or her weight and whatever. So were those comments made?
No.
Any type of comment like that made?
No.
Did she talk about wanting her, the sense of worthlessness or being ugly? And
she never made a comment in the 22 sessions that I was with her. She probably felt that way, you know, I would agree.
Okay.
Comments like that.
And you never responded, well, some guys like that. And again, these are in quotes, so, okay. I just want to ask the questions. Let's just put it on the table. All right. And in your opinion, this, the individual, what seems like at the last meeting or second last meeting, was very upset, very emotional?
It was the next to the last meeting. She was in kind of a dissociative state. She wasn't at the meeting, but a few days before, she had dissociative symptoms.
Okay, I don't want to get a diagnosis. All right, those are all my questions. Dr. Flowers, do you have any questions?
Yes, I have a few. I did thank you for giving a lot of documentation. That was very helpful. I'm wondering, I'm not sure if it's somewhere else, but I didn't see informed consent, intake paperwork, what was the confidentiality, what to do in the event of a crisis, those kind of things. Usually I see that in the paperwork about what we're going to do, consent for treatment, and so on. I don't know if that was done and we just didn't get copies or what. Can you comment on that?
Confidentiality?
Well, usually when you see a client,
yes.
You know, and if it's even if it's not private pay, you talk about expectations for, you know, paying for the services.
Yes.
What to do if you want to change appointments, what the treatment plan is, and then risk benefits and that kind of thing. And then they sign those things, their counsel, and then they sign. But I didn't see that in the documentation we received. I did see a lot of good clinical notes for the sessions, but I didn't see that aspect. I did see that. I wasn't sure if that was from you or from the people that were asking for the documentation for the medical status. I didn't know how that was. Because there should also be release signed by her authorizing you to submit the information that she wanted to for the disability or her status. So I don't know. I didn't see that either. Just wondering.
There also, I filled out her short-term disability forms.
Oh, yes, I did see that. But to release it to another agency, doctor, whatever, the client's supposed to sign permission that you can do.
I didn't put it in the...
Okay, it is in the paperwork you have, but we didn't get that aspect? Didn't they get that portion of it, I mean?
She did agree to do that.
To that effect? Okay.
And if the board requests, I can work with Dr. Farr and get any documentation that we inadvertently left out of the chart if necessary, if you'd like me to do that.
Okay, that wasn't specifically part of the complaint, you know, but in looking at it, I typically look for those key aspects of a clinical chart, you know, what we're going to do, the treatment plan, consent for treatment, how information will be released and when it is, how it will be released, and the authorizations. Obviously, he didn't just send a copy of this to some of his friends because they thought it might be interesting. You know, that'd be a whole other story. But that obviously did not happen. Those are my only questions. Thank you.
Dr. Brundage, do you have any questions?
I guess I do have a question. Dr. Farr, do you typically have people, do you have an intake that people can review and sign that they've had it? I am acknowledging that on page 60 of 60, we are looking at a HIPAA form, privacies, and she did sign that November 16, 2016. But do you have additional paperwork?
And when the patient comes in initially?
Correct.
I usually don't have that, no.
So you don't have any intake forms or anything that describes therapy?
Well, I did have an intake form, that initial session, the initial consultation, for each of the three times she saw me. Those are, you know, basically the forms I use that describe the initial presenting problem, and that's used. You know, it's on the first page here and second page. Initial consultation.
Dr. Farr, do you have any kind of intake information where they give you their name, their address?
Oh, yeah.
Contact in case of emergency?
Oh, sure.
Okay. And is that...
I didn't include it in the presentation that I...
Okay. And what additional information is at that on that document?
Well, it would be name, address, telephone number, emergency numbers, and things like that.
Okay. Does it tell them anything about your practice, your experience, anything like that?
On the initial, on that sheet, no, there wouldn't be anything. It would just be sort of a summary of the patient's basic information.
so it doesn't talk about how does the patient know about you and confidentiality and how to create an office visit or any of those things?
Well, the confidentiality issue is on the acknowledgement, you know, the notice of privacy.
Well, I see the HIPAA and the privacy, which is page 60 out of 60, but is there any other description about your practice?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't want you two talking over each other. Go ahead, Dr. Farr.
Well, during the initial consultation, I discuss the privacy issues.
Thank you, Dr. Farr.
All right. Great.
I thought of another question.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Brundage. Dr. Flowers has an additional question.
Yes, I'm wondering, too, apparently this client discontinued a couple times and then coming.
Three times.
And is there a policy that you have on when people quit showing up, reaching out to them, that kind of thing? Like, I haven't seen you for a while. Would you like to schedule again? Kind of thing.
Sometimes I will call patients.
Okay, I guess depends on the acuity of their issues.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, she came back three times, you know, and I always saw her when she was in crisis. And each of the times, you know, that I saw her, she was in crisis. And I made sure that I saw her.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. I don't believe there are any other questions. You can take a seat. We're going to go into deliberations. And into deliberations, since I'm not a psychologist, I represent the general public, I would like to ask some, I do have some concerns because the informed consent that we typically see in all of these documents it does not appear to be there or as detailed as what I've been familiar with seeing in the past. So I would ask Dr. Brundage, Dr. Flowers, their thoughts on that and if that is a concern. In regards to the complaint, I don't see an issue. I don't think there's anything that says or can show me that he was did not provide the tools she needed, that did not make those comments. I do not have concerns about that. My concerns are more on the informed consent documentations. Thoughts? Dr. Flowers?
Yes, I agree. The complaint itself does not appear to be a valid one. We don't know exactly what she did or didn't receive, and there's some good documentation on what you did offer. But I'm concerned about the, you know, as I've stated, consent forms and release of information, documentation when you send it out. You know, obviously she's not going to complain because she wanted you to do it, but there needs to be some kind of documentation of her permission to do that. So I'm concerned about that aspect.
Dr. Brundage, any
Chairman Shreve?
Yes.
Yes, Chairman Shreve. I too saw nothing of substance. Certainly no rule or statutory violation. And so initially my thought was to dismiss. But I'm also aware that really an informed consent is a standard of practice. And within that informed consent, it could be anything from, you know, harm and benefit, confidentiality, what to do in emergencies. In the way that the doctor described it, it appears that it's emergency numbers for the patient, nothing about emergency numbers of themselves. I am unclear if this falls in the parameters of a statute violation, but I would be more comfortable forwarding it to the board for review. And, you know, I'm not sure it's disciplinary, but it's certainly a letter of concern, which we as a complaint screening committee do not have control over. But I really feel that's a basic standard of practice that at this point has been adhered to, and I believe that the doctor does not have any of that. It's really surprising to me because the doctor has very complete notes. I mean, you know, if the information is good, but I also think that he's lacking in this area.
All right. With that, 1 second, I'm just looking at a couple of things. Consent and assessments, evaluations. So if you, in looking at our ethics code, the code of conduct, what would appear to be as potential, and maybe if you want to take a look at these, is 3.10, informed consent. And then also 9.03 is informed consent and assessments. And then 10.01 is informed consent and therapy. And I haven't read through all of them, but does that, looking at my colleagues here that do this, it does concern, now you have to sign for everything. I mean, there isn't, and that covers the psychologist as well as the client. Are there any thoughts?
Those sound appropriate to me. It's like that'd be, I guess, RS 32-2061, 16, unprofessional conduct, and that would be
3.10.
Yes, I guess it'd be DD, violating an ethical standard adopted by the board, and then it would be the 3.10, informed consent.
I'm not sure it's an ethical standard as so much a practice standard.
Okay.
I guess I would be more comfortable with just no informed consent.
So informed consent, the 3.10? Dr. Brundage, is that what you meant?
Dr. Brundage, this is Jean Galvin. I thought I understood you to say that you didn't know if that you would tie it to an ethical violation, but maybe just practicing below the standard.
Correct.
We can include, you know, both of them. So it would be 2061-16, DD relating to 3.10. I think 9.03 is like testing and evaluation. So I think at least 3.10. And then
would it be O?
It can be O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe. And then you have R, failing to obtain a client or patient's informed and written consent to release personal or otherwise confidential information to another party.
It sounds more appropriate.
And that, I think O is one, and then R, because you have the short-term disability that you did not see a release for. So and this doesn't mean that the board will find the same violation. It just goes to possible notice.
Yes. As was stated by Dr. Brundage, could be that a letter of concern will be issued by the full board, but we're not authorized to do that at this level.
So then just so I can summarize, we're looking at ARS 32-2061-0, providing services that are unnecessary, unsafe, or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that is unprofessional by current standards or practice. R, which is failing to obtain client or patient's informed and written consent to release personal or otherwise confidential information to another party unless the release is otherwise authorized by law. And then double D, which then pertains to the ethics code 3.10, which is informed consent. So my motion, I would make a motion to move this to the board with those specific concerns.
Yes, I second the motion.
Second, we got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. You'll be hearing from the board. You did mention something about maybe you didn't pass in all your, provide all the information that you had, but it's important that we receive everything. So the board will be getting, board members should be getting hold of you.
And they would have obviously the right to submit it to the board prior to the review by the board.
Right. All right, thank you for coming today. All right, that I believe concludes all of our cases for today. I'd like to thank the board staff. Thank you, and Ms. Galvin, for your support and for all of your work to help this go along so efficiently.
And thank you, Dr. Brundage and Dr. Flowers. Is there a motion to dismiss?
I
make a motion to dismissal.
I'll either second or
got a second? We got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
All right. Goodbye, Dr. Brundage. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.